The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike, brought to you by Palm Beach Atlantic University, Orlando. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey, friends, and welcome to Afternoons with Mike right here on The Shepherd. It is my joy each and every day on the program to get to interview someone from the community, be that up north in north central Florida, around our station in Gainesville, or in the Ocala area on WRZN, or in Orlando on WIWA, all under the banner of The Shepherd. And my program, Afternoons with Mike, is also a podcast. Today, I am with a guest that I had never met before. He's coming to our studio to do this program live. I'm talking to an attorney, Michael, it's C. Kelly, correct?
That's right. Yes, now, Mike, thanks. Thanks for having me here.
It's great having you here, sir. I'm really fascinated in just our chatting before we began this recording to find out your background, to find out you grew up in Central Florida.
That's right.
And never dreamed that you'd be doing what you're doing now.
No, that absolutely. I'm a partner at Schutz & Bowen. My practice area is primarily construction litigation, development law. I do mostly litigation, but also a little bit of transactional work. And I kind of found myself getting into construction law almost as an accident. I had grown up here in Orlando, like you said. I'm the oldest of six kids, born to Mike Kelly and Candy Kelly. And I grew up in construction. My dad had a construction company. And when my youngest brother was born, I was 11 years old. And my mom had a little bit of difficulty with five kids in the home.
Hmm.
And so
whenever
we didn't have school, I ended up on a job site. And that was my babysitter. So from 11 all the way through high school, whenever I wasn't in school or doing something for vacation, I would be on a job site learning various trades.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember always complaining about it, never loved it. And my dad was consistent with his response. I want you to know exactly what you don't want to do with your life. But he also wanted to make sure.
That's well said.
It was said. Well said. But he also wanted to make sure that I had a trade and that I always could provide for my family, no matter what the circumstances of life might bring. And he wanted me to know the value of a hard day's work and building something with my own hands. And that was a wonderful experience. Even though I didn't like it as a kid growing up, I can reflect back and look back and think, wow, what dignity that work gives people.
Mm-hmm.
And the ability to go to bed at night having exhausted yourself in an endeavor, having built something with your hands and be able to look back and see what that looks like, the value that you create. What a wonderful gift now that I have as an adult, being able to look back, in the way that my dad raised me.
Yeah. And he trained you with all the tools and you got to know all about that, which is something that happened to me as well. Now, what kind of construction did your dad do?
So the first thing he did, actually back up for a second, my dad, he played football here in Orlando at Edgewater High School. He was a little bit of a famous football player at the time, back in the mid 60s. And then he went to play football at the University of Florida.
Go Gators.
Go Gators.
Yeah.
With the likes of like Jack Youngblood and Carlos Alvarez, John Reeves, Robert Harrell, Gene Peek, a bunch of guys that I had the pleasure of getting to know a little bit as I grew up.
You've just become the best friend to all of our Gainesville listeners right now, man.
Well, and actually, you can look him up if you look at the individual game performance in a bowl game. So that specific criteria. He is number three all time in University of Florida history, behind the likes of Danny Werfel and Tim Tebow.
Wow.
Then you'll get this middle linebacker from the late 60s, Mike Kelly, who had a phenomenal game against the University of Tennessee in the Gator Bowl in 1969. And so that's kind of my claim to fame with Gator Nation. Mm-hmm. Is I'm his son. Growing up, I was a tiny kid. I was kind of scrawny. He was huge growing up. And I knew that I wouldn't be big enough to play football at the University of Florida, but I thought perhaps I'd be able to go there for law school. So even as a kid, I had wanted to go to law school. And my dad had signed a contract with the 49ers. and was going to go play professionally. And he always bragged later in life that his contract was worth $2,000 more than Youngblood's contract to go play with the Rams. But a couple days before leaving for training camp, he had a an injury. And he ruptured two discs in his back, and it ended his football career. And his consolation prize was my mom. And he gave up on his entire career, devastated, thought his life was over, ended up getting married to my mom, and then needing to figure out what to do. And so that brings us to how he got into construction. He started painting apartments for $100 an apartment, and he'd do an apartment a day. Back in the mid 70s, he then had me and then a flurry of kids, the four of us within 5 years, and then my younger brother and then my youngest sister.
Four kids under five.
That's right.
Well, that was a busy family right there.
That's right. So when my youngest brother was born, and that's how I ended up on the job site. So I started with commercial and residential painting. Mm-hmm. That's what my dad had started to do. And then he got into more of the more general construction later in my life. And we kind of grew the business doing a lot of other things. But where I started was actually painting. So I started at like I said, at 11 and went on through high school. My dad had hurt his back. And that's, as I said, what ended his football career. Well, 20 years later, his company is doing great. He's got operations all over the state. And everything's running like just this perfect machine. And he decided now's the time for him to take a little bit of time to fix that injury. And so he went and had surgery. I'm a sophomore in high school at this time. He went and had surgery, and they severed a nerve in his leg. And he actually was confined to a bed for 9 months. They didn't know if he'd be able to walk again.
Oh my.
And so here I am as the oldest son in our family, and our entire financial situation, everything in life turned upside down in a matter of days, literally. He ended up having nobody that was loyal to him, that stayed with him for whatever reason. There was a number of reasons. It was family situation. It was just changes in life circumstances. But he had all the folks that he had trained up and brought up in this company that he had built, they left him, and he was now destitute and having this huge family, you know, to take care of and not knowing what to do. He's confined to a bed. And like I said, for 9 months, he was not able to walk. And so as the oldest son, I didn't know what to do. So I started to do construction and work and do what I could. My dad ended up relearning how to walk. It took a little bit of time, and then we worked together for about 3 years to get the company back to where we were at least in the black. We got the company sold off, and he moved up to the Nashville area and started a new kind of new life and a new career. And I thought I was going to be a construction worker for the rest of my life. And that's where I was telling you before, my mom was not going to have it. So she applied to schools for me, and based on some of the grades that I had, and some of the scores that on the testing that I was fortunate to get, I was able to get a full ride academic scholarship and go to school
at Rollins College.
At Rollins College
in Orlando.
Yeah, they invested a lot in me. That was very kind of them. So I studied economics there. I had already been working, you know, in construction, and so when I came back to school, I was just a couple years older than my peers. And I just had a different perspective on life. But I got done with that degree and got the degree in economics. And I remember the chair of the economics department going, okay, what are you going to do next? You need to go to get a professional degree, a graduate degree, go to law school, MBA, something. You got to do something. And at the time, I was just like, no, I'm just going to go. I'm going to go to work. And he's like, no, you got to go. And I had told you I had that dream.
Yeah, about becoming an attorney
when I was younger. But here I am with the opportunity to, you know, graduate really well at a great school, a very well-respected school, and to go on to pursue my education. And at the time, I just said, no, I need to go to work for whatever reason. So I left education and went to work. And I had a couple of different careers that didn't really go very well. I failed at a bunch of businesses. I tried to start businesses that I failed at. And then I found myself into a career that actually did well. I was selling mortgages and construction loans for residential building because I knew the construction background or industry. And I did well in that until 2007 when we had the mortgage crisis.
And then crash.
And then crash. And
that's right.
And so newly married and not knowing exactly what to do, I had kind of searched my heart and like, you know, I always did want to go back to law school. Maybe this is the time to do it. And so my wife and I prayed about it. We thought about it a lot. And we she had a job here in Orlando and we had a home here in Orlando and thought, well, if I get admitted into a school, then I'll go. And so I took the LSAT and then applied. And then lo and behold, University of Florida admitted me to their law school. So,
and once again, go Gators.
Once again, go Gators. So, so right. The dream that I had as a kid of going to, you know, my father's alma mater, it was interrupted by about 10 years, but I was able to go back and, yeah. and actually do that, which was a wonderful experience. I remember starting law school. I looked at the schedule and I'm like, oh, what am I going to do with all this free time? There's, you know, I'm only going to be in class a couple hours a day. I was working as a loan officer for a bank in Lake Mary at the time. And so I'm like, well, I'll keep that job because I could still do kind of, I could do the lending side in my spare time. And then I thought, well, what am I going to do at night if I'm up in Gainesville and my wife is at home in Orlando? So I thought I'd start driving limousines. And that lasted about 3 weeks into law school until I realized that law school was actually a little bit harder than it looked.
Yeah, you have just a little bit of reading to do.
Yeah, a little bit of reading to do. And so so law school was a fun experience for me. But again, I'm a little bit older than the rest of my peers. I just took a different approach to it. Mm-hmm. I had a different intensity about it, I think, than I would have if I had gone straight through. And having some work experience and some experience in various industries, I really sunk my teeth into law school and had a lot of fun. I ended up running a couple of different organizations there. One was a more political organization that brought in speakers from all over the country. And the other was, an alternative dispute resolution organization where we were training law students to be mediators, to help mediate disputes at the main campus between, undergrad students, roommate disputes, that sort of thing. And so just did a lot of extracurricular kind of things. At law
these
school.
Clubs really helped form the skills that an attorney needs.
I think so. Yeah, I think so. And also gave me just a lot of different experience with, on different topics. I was always interested in hearing what other people had to say about certain topics and trying to dig in to various topics of the day and ask questions. I just like to ask questions. Mm-hmm. And get people talking. I just have found that if you want to learn how to think really well, you need to start talking about things and in particular engaging in dialogue. And when people don't engage in dialogue, they lose the ability to think about things critically. And so I was consistently trying to change the conversation on the campus at UF by bringing in these sometimes controversial topics to have people talk about things and debate things and get deeper down beyond just kind of the talking points. Mm-hmm. And to figure out what was really underneath the surface. Mm-hmm. With some of what people had, whatever position they had chosen. And I had a lot of fun in that, but that also led me to doing a lot of additional reading, a lot of additional investigation into different things and trying to come up with topics. And one of the things that I did while I was at law school was a little bit of extra reading on some of the cases. And as a result of that kind of curiosity and preparation ahead of time, I didn't realize it at the time, but I had got myself prepared for a visit by the Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. He came to UF when I was a second semester in my 1L year. And he was coming the next day to talk to the whole school. And we knew he was coming, but he came a day early and he walks into my 1L Civ Pro class. And I didn't even know who he was. Honestly, I had this dream about going to law school and becoming an attorney, but I really didn't know much about what it meant to be an attorney. And I didn't know anything about the Supreme Court, and I didn't know anything about some of this, you know, some of the political issues in the legal world and how those were being played out. So I didn't really know who Clarence Thomas was. I had read a couple of opinions by him, and I thought they were well-reasoned. I liked his opinions because mm-hmm. they helped students kind of understand the case law and kind of understand the evolution of some of these doctrines over time. And so I had studied some of his opinions from that point of view, but I didn't really know that much about him. But he comes into our class and sort of unannounced. Everybody is like, oh my goodness, there's Clarence Thomas. And very quickly, he just said, hey, I'm just here. I'd like to introduce myself to you guys and see if you have any questions for me. I'd like to take the next hour, if you'll let me, and answer whatever questions you have. When I come to a school, I really like to get to know the students. And if you'll let me, I'd like to get to know you. And I thought, wow, you know, what an opportunity. And so kids in the class start firing off questions, and it'll take too long, longer than I've already gone on, but it'll take too long to explain the scenario. But the short story is I asked him a question that he turned to me and said, that's the best question I've ever been asked.
Wow.
I don't have an answer for you. And he had an answer for everything
oh,
and everybody.
My goodness.
But he tells me, I don't have an answer for you. Give me your contact information and I will get you an answer. So I hurriedly wrote down my cell phone number and my email address. And that night, one of his clerks emailed me. And the next day, when he came to talk to the school, he saw me in the crowd and he said, Mike, did you get the answer? I'm going to talk about that today. That question that you asked, I'm going to talk about it today. Well, I had encountered him a couple other times throughout the rest of my time in law school. And we always had great conversations. Got to spend, you know, a lot of time in his chamber just talking to him or talking to his wife, Jenny, and really just struck up a neat relationship here and there whenever we came in contact with each other. Really neat stories. But that culminated in his swearing me into the Florida bar in a private ceremony with just me and my wife when I graduated law school, which was really, really nice. Actually, he said, you know, you can come up to DC, we'll do it in chambers, it'll be fun. And we'll, you know, and I said, well, actually, Shandy is almost 9 months pregnant with our first daughter. It'd be hard for her to travel. If you're coming to Florida, it might be easier to do it then. And he said, sure, I'll be in Florida and I'll do that. And so he came to Florida and did that ceremony for me when he was here, which was neat.
So cool.
Yeah. So
what an amazing story.
Really neat.
You know what? Before we take a break here, I just got to say this. The whys to how all of that happened, the whys would be that you're asking yourself, what am I going to do? And obviously God's put in your heart this ability to ask questions. And even before you ask questions, to read up mm-hmm. and to learn and to delve into different subjects that you would have had no way of knowing that you were being ultimately prepared to ask a question that was going to usher in a relationship like that. That's just an amazing story.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think that God works behind the scenes a lot in our lives in a neat way.
He does.
And sometimes you can't see it until you look back.
I agree completely. Michael C. Kelly's my guest, an attorney from Orlando, and we're going to be back with him in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike. Don't go away. This is The Shepherd.
You've had this feeling that there has to be more to work than just work. You have a job, but what you really long for is a career, one that makes you feel like you're actually making a difference in the world. At Palm Beach Atlantic University, they understand that your career journey is unique. PBA's Orlando campus offers respected programs with personalized instruction from a Christian worldview that empowers you to realize your goals and career opportunities on your terms. Start your new journey today with Palm Beach Atlantic University Orlando at pba.edu. That's pba.edu. Your degree, your way. pba.edu.
Having the time of my life in the studio today with Michael Kelly. Michael is an attorney. And we've just heard this most amazing story of how he met Clarence Thomas, Supreme Court Justice, a man that he himself went through amazing stuff to get to the point where he is today. And I think most Americans that are middle age would remember the Anita Hill, Clarence Thomas debacle, really, sure, is what it was. But here at your juncture of your life, when you're a student at UF, mm-hmm, and for you to ask the question that gained his attention, not just his attention that day,
right,
but it's opened up an entire relationship.
Yeah, it was really neat. I thought it was a kind of a one-time situation. He got the question, answered the question by email, kept in contact with me a little bit by email, but he's a busy guy, and I figured I'll take a stab and write a little bit of an email talking a little bit about my background and about what brought me to law school, about my background in construction and working for the family business, having kind of the injury that my dad went through, and just that kind of experience that led me back to law school and to wanting to become an attorney, which is a longer story than we have time for me to tell. But I wrote it to him and thinking he'll never read it. And sure that he would never read it. And so, but I figured this is my chance to tell him thank you, because when he came to the school, there was a lot of antagonism directed toward him for one reason or another. And a lot of people would ridicule him because he never asks questions at oral argument and this sort of thing. And his response was always brilliant, in my opinion. You know, he said, when we hear oral argument, we've already researched everything as Supreme Court justices and with our clerks. We've read every opinion. We know exactly what we think.
Mm-hmm.
And our job when we're there is to listen to the litigants and to listen to the advocates and have them change our opinion about something. Why would I ever want to interrupt them? I want them to have the full chance to change my mind. And I don't need to signal to other people, you know, where I'm going one way or the other. I don't need to try to get a soundbite out of things. I just want them to convince me that why they're right. And that's why he doesn't interrupt people. And when he explains it that way, it's like, oh, well, of course. Why does anybody else ever interrupt? And so as I was writing to him and thinking, okay, I'm going to tell him, because here's the point. When he came to UF and he sat there and talked to us for an hour, he did the same thing with all the other first year student classes. And he got to know the students, and he really, I mean, the questions that were being asked of him were some of them were outlandish. Some of them were really embarrassing as a student there, mm-hmm, at UF. And some of them were great. They're all over the board because students are coming, they're approaching him from different postures and different positions and different mindsets. He never criticized any of the students, and he, with such grace and mastery, he would kind of dismantle the premise of their questions in many ways, and then he would show them why the question was asked the wrong way or what they should be talking about, what they should be thinking about. And he changed people's minds through dialogue, not through telling them they were wrong necessarily, mm-hmm, but in instructing them and showing them how they were analyzing things the wrong way as law students. And when he left, the atmosphere of the campus, in my opinion, absolutely changed. People became more open-minded. They became more willing to engage in dialogue on things. And I thought, what a beautiful thing, what a beautiful legacy to have left a school that up until that point I had felt, and this probably was just my own experience, but I had felt was a little bit closed off to dialogue and learning about each other, because I don't think any of us has all the right answers. Or all the answers. I think we all can learn from each other, and mm-hmm, that we learn from each other in dialogue. So I took a moment to write kind of a thank you note to him. Well, a year later, I'm at the University of Virginia campus, UVA campus, for a conference. He ends up being the keynote speaker at that conference. And I'm talking to some folks and get, you know, just having fun. And somebody comes up and goes, Clarence Thomas is looking for you. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
That's crazy.
He's asking for you. And I'm like, he doesn't even know who I am. Like, he found out that some kids from University of Florida were here, and he asked if Michael Kelly was there. And he wants you to come over. And so I'm okay. And so I walk in, he's surrounded by a bunch of people, and he sees me, and he's like, Mike. And he shakes my hand and grabs me and slaps me on the back and starts talking to me and making fun of the Gators because he's a Nebraska fan. And, you know, and he's just kidding with me. And he starts talking about the story that I told him in my email that I was sure he was never going to read. I was certain he didn't read. And he's asking me questions about my family, my dad, my background in construction, and why I wanted to come into the practice of law to begin with. And I was just blown away by somebody like that who actually took the moment, you know, to read probably a very long-winded email from, mm-hmm. from a kid that he just had an interaction with. And it just blew me away. And so we continued kind of to have some dialogue here and there. And then, like I said earlier, it culminated in his swearing me into the Florida bar in a private ceremony, which was just a wonderful moment. So that's my connection with Justice Clarence Thomas.
Oh, that is such a fascinating thing. And it really does go to show that we really don't ever know exactly what's going to happen with these things that we feel compelled to do. Like you wanted to say thank you, mm-hmm. but you were convinced that he would never actually see it. But here's somebody of his stature, of his importance, with a schedule that he carries and none of us can even comprehend. Not only did he read it, but he is active in looking and searching you out mm-hmm. when he hears that there might be somebody from the University of Florida there.
Right.
That's just an amazing story. And I think that sounds just like God. When yeah. God does something, he brings people into our lives. It really is no accident. And really the things that happen to you, you look back and it's like you can see the hand of providence all over your life.
That's right. I think about stories in the Old Testament. One of the things I neglected to mention was when my dad would wake me up to go to work at 11, 12, 13, 18 years old, throughout my really formative years, he would always wake me up about 30 minutes early. And which I did not like at all, because we were already getting up early. We had to be at the job site before sun up, and we would usually stay until past sundown. So sleep was pretty precious to me as a kid when I had to go to the job site. And he would wake me up early, and really I remember this vividly from the age of 11 on, put a Bible in front of me and say, just read it. And sometimes I'd fall asleep in the middle of reading it, you know, 5 minutes in, and he'd come in and kind of, you know, tap me and say, you know, keep reading. And so he would give me 30 minutes of time to read. And, at first it was a chore, and then it became more interesting. And as I began to read the Bible more and more, I became fascinated with it. And I asked a lot of questions. And I think by the time I graduated high school, I had probably read it cover to cover at least half a dozen times.
Wow.
Maybe more. And my dad's philosophy was the greatest instructor was the Word of God and the Holy Spirit. And you didn't have to have people to teach you anything. You just needed to read it for yourself. Mm-hmm. And he was convinced if you would read it yourself instead mm-hmm. of letting other people just tell you about it, then it would change you from the inside out. And so as a kid, I read and I read and I read, I remember I hated the Psalms as a kid. I thought Proverbs were awesome because it was the wisdom books and everything. And I would tell my dad, and he'd look at me, with the, kind of compassion that comes from a father who's lived through a little bit more than his young son. And he's like, just wait, you'll come back around to the Psalms. The Psalms are my best friend now, you know, mm-hmm. having a little bit more experience in life. You know, you told me a little bit about your experience and some of the things you and your wife went through. My wife and I went through the same. And we actually had a pretty devastating miscarriage when we were in law school that was really hard to recover from. But it's going through those kinds of times, those kinds of dark times where you don't know what's going on. You mm-hmm. don't know what's ahead. You don't know how you got here. You don't know where you're going, and you don't know why. And I think it's in those times when if we will press in and actually contend with God, wrestle with him, ask him why, what's going on, and really try to get to know him. I think it's not a phrase that my dad coined, but he used to say, never trust a man who doesn't walk with a limp. And I would say never trust, you know, any person that doesn't walk with a limp, because when Jacob wrestled with God, God dislocated his hip and he walked with a limp the rest of his life. But he changed his name from the deceiver, the manipulator, You know, there's kind of two main characteristics of humanity. There's one of Esau, where I can do everything on my own strength and my own ability. And there's a Jacob where I can manipulate and figure it out myself. And I can do it, you know, through manipulation. And neither of those characters are characters of a man or woman of God. But once you have wrestled with him and he has dislocated you from those identities, either one. And for me, it was probably a little bit of both. For my dad, it was definitely both. But once he's dislocated you from those identities, then you become new. You walk with a little bit of a limp. You're a little bit more humble in your stride because you've experienced what it is to contend with the Most High God. And so as you go through life and we go through these experiences, and you've had many of them, you've shared with me, and you know, and I've gone through my share, but each time you go through that, it's a refining process that brings you closer to knowing the heart of the Father.
That's so true. Michael, I read a book years ago, and it was called The Refiner's Fire. And in it, he talked about how that the silver maker will, as he is refining silver, he'll put it through the fire. And it's the fire, and it's only the fire, that will bring out the dross. And he had this illustration that I've never forgotten. He said he'll keep the fire on that silver, and it's just burning it hotter and hotter. And then as it does, more and more dross floats to the top, and he continues to scrape that off. And it's the fire that really brings the purity and brings the reflection. He said, then he made this. He said, the refiner knows when the fire is over, when its fire is done, when it's done its job, when he's able to look back at that liquid silver and its molten state and clearly see his own reflection, then the silver has been purified to the point where it needs to be. And it's not, you know, we get into the hot parts of life, the heat, if you will, the furnace is turned up for us. We always, initially, I think most humans do, think something's wrong.
Right.
Something's bad. But it's God who often heats us up for something very good.
Yeah. I think what it's like to be that silver a lot.
And, yeah.
It's not fun. You know, it's the pruning of, you know, I got to visit a winery the first time and looked at these bushes that would have been lush during their season and how hard they were trimmed back and pruned back to almost stumps. And, you know, you're seeing comparative pictures of what a full vine looks like as compared to what they really trim it down to. And it's a devastating process. It's a violent process that really, whether it's the refiner's fire, whether it's pruning, it is a process that if you're the subject of it and going through it, you have absolutely no idea what's going on or why.
Yeah.
And it hurts.
Yeah. You lop off those branches and it looks like you've killed it.
It really does look like it's, there's no way you're producing fruit out of that again.
Yeah.
And then you see the next season, it's a huge lush vine again. And we're so much like that. Mm-hmm. And we go through these experiences and we absolutely are adverse to pain. We don't like discomfort. We live in a society where it's kind of easy to get comfort, you know, quickly. Fast food society, we get what, you know, we can order things on Amazon. So we can solve our problems pretty quickly. And when we get in a situation where we can't, it becomes very uncomfortable. It's very hard. And praise God when we're in a situation where we can't rescue ourselves. Because if we can rescue ourselves, then, you know, who cares? What's that worth? But if you get into a spot where you literally need to be rescued, thank God for putting us in those situations. Because but for that, we probably would only rely on ourselves. We would only look to ourselves and would not look to our Creator. But when we're brought to that spot, and that's the spot that I seem to keep getting brought back to in my own life for one reason or another, in different ways, but brought back to where it's like, okay, God, here I am.
Yeah.
Do what you want.
Yeah. I think it's pretty clear that everyone in America was brought through one of those spots in 2020.
For sure.
And, you know, our country, perhaps it's the judgment of God. Many people feel that a great measure of things that's happened would fall into that line. Whatever it is, no one knows the ins and outs of all of these questions. But one thing for sure, the heat that we've all felt has changed us. Mm-hmm. And I think many people, that change has been for the better. And they have realized through this discomfort, through this interruption in our lives, that God is wanting to highlight and put the spotlight, as he has done in your life time and time again. Because I get it that he formed you and he put you way back when you didn't have any idea that this was happening. But he made you to be one that could respond in a moment like that, to respond correctly. And that's what God's done in your life.
Yeah. Yeah, he has. And thanks for him. I'm constantly reminded of, except the Holy Spirit draw, none of us would choose.
Yeah.
So it is a gift to be drawn to him. I do agree that this has been a challenging year. Obviously it's been unprecedented for anybody that is alive today. Of course, the world has gone through these kinds of things before, and it likely will go through them again. But to go through it in our time, I do think what has come out of it is that we've begun to realize what's really more important.
That's good.
Yeah. What's important in our relationships, in our families, in our ministry, or our outreach to those around us, and with our work. And so I think that the benefit to our society, having gone through this kind of COVID situation, is going to produce good fruit in the lives of many people, in our relationships, and in what we do going forward.
I'm praying that it brings revival, and that's what I'm praying for, and I know that many people are doing the same. My guest today is Michael C. Kelly, an attorney, and we'll be back with him for one more segment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike, right here on The Shepherd.
Are you looking to make a fresh career start? As Florida's top Christian college, Palm Beach Atlantic University Orlando knows your faith is important to you, and it should be to your school as well. PBA Orlando offers a faith-based experience unlike any other. Whether it's a degree in leadership ministry or counseling, PBA combines biblical concepts from exceptional professors who bring years of real-world experience as leaders in their fields. Call them today at 844-PBA-ORLANDO. That's 844-PBA-ORLANDO. Education for your soul as well as your mind.
In the studio today with Michael C. Kelly, you know, Mike, I get to talk to a lot of people, and I'm always just on one hand blessed and on the other hand surprised when I see the multifaceted ways that God really takes us all and all the personalities of people, and how that his cut, if you will, if we could use the diamond maker for a moment as a motif, the cut that he's made in your life, it's so clear to see that God was making you into something that he had in his mind. And it started years and years ago when you were 11.
Right. Right. And I've been fortunate to find my way into a wonderful firm and a group of folks that practice at Schutz and Bowen in downtown Orlando. I had met John Daneker, who was at the time was the practice group leader for the construction group. Years earlier, I was introduced to him through some of his clients that I had worked with. And at the time he was, you know, he said, I don't have a position for you, but I like the fact that you have this construction background and you actually know what a lot of us are talking about because you did it for a living. And it's easy, he would say, it's easy to teach people the law. It's very difficult to teach construction and to actually be able to visualize and conceptualize some of these things. Because in a vacuum, you don't, you know, if you've just gone through the education system and you haven't actually put your hands to something, it's very hard to see what it is that people do in the construction industry, on the design side, on the construction side. So when he made an offer for me to come work there, it was in that context of, you know, we can teach you the law. We're just excited that you know construction. And so what I've found today in my practice is that all of those years of experience of growing up in construction, not knowing why, not really enjoying, you know, why as a young person growing up, why is my dad forcing me to work, doing this kind of thing, all these questions. Now I look back and I see that all of that was preparation not preparation I chose, but preparation that was chosen for me. But it has brought me to the point where now, you know, when I look at a set of plans or when I'm talking to a project manager or I'm dealing with a design issue or construction defect issue, I know it because I lived it. Mm-hmm. And so it has made me, I think, significantly more skillful and better in my practice on both the kind of the transactional side. If we're trying to, what I love to do is try to prevent harm and prevent things from going the wrong way. And so on the value creation side, the business creation side up front, I try to apply that to what I'm doing on the transactional side. But then also, you know, things happen. Mm-hmm. Life happens. And sometimes you need an advocate to defend you. Sometimes you need somebody to stand up and to protect you. Sometimes you have bullies that are coming after you and you need somebody to stand up to them. And so I've been fortunate to find an opportunity to utilize kind of that nature of me as the oldest son of a former football player, kind of a rough guy. And we grew up kind of rough and tumble. And so I get to kind of use that side of my personality as well in the defense of those who are otherwise going to be taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. Often people say that, you know, justice is only procured if you have the financial resources to procure it. And I think that may be true. But also injustice can be procured by those who have the financial resources to procure injustice. And so you have to stand up against injustice. You have to battle it. And you have to be not only willing, but able to. And so we are in a situation in this, I think in this time in our society, where there's a lot of contention going on. And a lot of people are trying to bully. And one of the things that I was fortunate to get involved in through my church, First Pres downtown, where I'm just recently on the session there, an elder at First Pres, but I went through the Gotham Fellowship through the Collaborative. And the Collaborative is kind of this faith and work initiative of trying to just show people how to connect really who they are deep down inside, regardless of your beliefs. But what are your beliefs? And how do those beliefs really impact what you do for a living?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember coming into the practice of law thinking, well, my faith is going to enable me to be more excellent in my research and my writing and my advocacy and all this stuff. And what I found was that the area where I practice in, there are a ton of very talented, very dedicated professionals. It's a very collegial bar, I think, in the construction practice, but everybody is really awesome. Everybody's really good. And so my faith doesn't necessarily distinguish me from anybody else in terms of the quality of what I do. But how does it distinguish in terms of my intention, my goal, what I'm trying to accomplish, how I go about accomplishing it? And the Gotham Fellowship is something that really helped me to connect that. We did a cultural renewal project, and everybody had to decide an industry, whether their own or a different industry, and they had to talk about what was broken in that industry. And then uncover what are the idols behind that brokenness, and then what might be a resolution. And so I did law, and I came to my analysis of law was, you know, what's broken in law is that if you don't have the money to buy good legal services, then sometimes justice can be denied to you. Or stated differently, justice is only provided to those who have the financial means to procure.
Mm.
And I think that that's broken. But what is really causing that brokenness? And I really began to dig in deep, you know, because some of the things, if you're looking at it from the outside, you might say, well, attorneys are just, you know, they're just greedy. They want to make more money. And so they cause these problems, and you've got a whole bunch of attorneys out there that are all fighting to get a fee. And so it obviously creates an expensive service when you've got so much greed. And that's fine. I can see that. But the Gotham Fellowship, kind of the paradigm is when you are in an industry, you are fluent in the languages of that industry. You actually will understand that industry better than somebody who's outside. And so some people feel like they can be called to be missionaries to other, you know, to other nations. And that's great. And God obviously calls plenty of people to be missionaries to different nations. It's so much easier when you speak the language of the mm-hmm. nation that you're called to, or you know the culture, or you are part of that culture already. You can fit into it. It's harder, not uncommon and not necessarily something that doesn't happen, but it's harder when you don't speak the language, when you don't know the culture. And so apply that paradigm to our work. When we, if we are to called to do something different and to change things in our work, we are natives to that area of work, that industry. So we speak the languages, we know the culture, we know the lingo, we know the folks that are there, and we are able to diagnose better, I think, the things that are broken in the industry. So as I began to diagnose, well, what's really broken in the practice of law, it's something that I said earlier. If you turn the question on its head and say, well, yes, it's difficult for people to procure justice if they don't have the financial means to do it, you can also say it's easy for people to procure injustice if they have the financial means to do so. And as I begin to analyze it that way, I began to see some of these disputes, not all of them, but that some of these disputes are the result of litigants that have, have a lot of ego, not always, but sometimes, and they will fight no matter what. And so sometimes fighting is the right thing to do. Sometimes you have to. Sometimes, you have to stand up to a bully. You have to fight for injustice. But there are sometimes where there's a better scenario, a better solution. And if you understand what is motivating people behind their choices and you can help them kind of find a path to what they really want that avoids the fight, I think that might, that sometimes can be a better scenario, a better solution. And so what I began to discover is that it's a nuanced issue. There's a lot of reasons why an industry is broken. And I don't have the answers. I don't have all the answers, but maybe I have a few. And maybe mm-hmm. if I dig in and try to help with the answers that I bring to the table, maybe I can work together with others who are going toward the same goal, which really ought to be what is in the best interest of either the client, the business that's involved, the interest that's involved, the issue that's involved. A lot of times in our situation, it's the project. The project is the most important thing. How do we keep the project on schedule? How do we keep it on time? How do we keep it on budget? How do we keep everybody working together toward the ultimate goal? And if we're just going to square off and like try to fight each other at every disagreement, that's not going to work. But if we can figure out ways to avoid the fight and to work cooperatively together, it's just another way of how, the faith that I have, the ethics that I have, the beliefs that I have in a God who loves me, who knows what, he has planned for me, and are good things. They're mm-hmm. not bad things. Who is sovereign. If I can believe that he's given me the ability to come in and create solutions rather than disagreements and results rather than just stalemate and to benefit a project rather than to shut it down, then I can begin to apply kind of my belief system in a way that is more creative to the overall resolution of the issue. And so that's kind of the way that I approach my business. And I've been fortunate to have the hands-on experience in construction, but also I've done a lot of development for a small private equity group here in town where we did a bunch of development all over the country. And we try to proactively avoid disputes and avoid legal issues and situations. And so a lot of the experience that I've been able to accomplish or gather just informs better and better how I do everything going forward. And so again, it's the kind of thing where you don't necessarily see it going through it, but looking back, you can see how all the dots line up and how mm-hmm. everything's connected.
You know, one of the things that has to be so frustrating for a believer who is an attorney, as you are, is to see how many people in courts, the judges in courts, the attorneys that are representing things that we as believers would believe are ungodly. You talk about justice, and if you remove the good of God and the standards of the word, you really lose a great even definition or an understanding to what the answer of what is just, what is truth, you've lost the real heart and soul of the fiber of justice if you don't understand God.
Yeah, I think that's right. One of the things I do in my spare time, when my wife is taken care of and my kids are taken care of and we got it planned out early enough, I like to organize a debate night. And so I'll come up with topics and I'll email it out to a couple dozen people and say, okay, here's a topic, here's some resources, go do some independent study. But we're going to get together and we're going to debate this as a group. I'm going to moderate it because I do a good job, I think, moderating, because I don't have a lot of the answers, but I have a lot of good questions. And a lot of the folks, a lot of my friends and the people that are able to come to these debate nights, they are really brilliant people and really thoughtful people. And they approach things from a different point of view, but from a point of view that's willing to hear and listen. And so one of the things we debated was justice. Mm-hmm. What is justice?
What is it?
You know, if you add something, a modifier to the front of that word, does it make it more itself? Yeah. If you add distributive or retributive justice or social justice, or if you add something to modify it, does it make it more that perfect concept that we're all striving to? You know, is the American form of justice actually justice? You know, do we get at it a little bit? Maybe. Do we miss it entirely? I don't know. And so we come together, we debate, we hear from different people from diverse backgrounds, diverse points of view, and they have to articulate their position. And what I've often said is it's hard for people to know how to think until they actually have to articulate their position.
And that really is a difficult thing to do. And I can see that you're one who is able to draw out the good and the truth in a situation like that. Michael, thank you for being here and really have enjoyed this. You got to come back.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for having me.
We have had a blast having you here. Michael C. Kelly, attorney with Schutz, it is, in downtown Orlando.
That's right.
And also a member of First Pres. Say hello to David Swanson for us, if you will. We love that guy. And thank you for being with me here today. It's been fun.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for inviting me. I've enjoyed it tremendously. So
it's been great. And friends, thank you for joining us as well. We'll catch you next time right here on Afternoons with Mike.
Afternoons with Mike, brought to you by Palm Beach Atlantic University, Orlando.